It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Welcome, family. Gather around the Alexa or someone's phone showing YouTube, and let's enjoy the lovely Thanksgiving podcast. Bring the turkey in so it can hear. Let's just talk about what we're thankful for. Mostly we're thankful for our 4.5 remaining listeners.
Yep, very thankful.
There are many of you, but you're like family to us. Because I hate this man, and if it weren't for you, I would never speak to him again. So, now that I think about it, maybe I'm not thankful for y'all. But William should be thankful for
you. I am, yeah.
Because otherwise I'm not.
But yeah, gratitude's kind of my thing.
I do realize now that you all are forcing me into a relationship with this man that I did not ask for or want. So, yeah, maybe I don't like y'all. I don't know. But bring your family in because they're going to love it. And then we're going to get new fans. And then your curse is lifted and you don't have to listen. You can pass it on to somebody else. That's great.
But you only get this chance once a year. Thanksgiving episode,
yes,
that's the only
Thanksgiving
one.
Thanksgiving is the only time. That is when the stars and birds are aligned.
And that's the only time so you can lift the curse. We can't lift
hello
it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that records every Thanksgiving.
Every single one.
If you think you know another one that does, they're lying. but we're on Thursdays, and so here we are at Peter's Donuts. For us, this is the Friday before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
If you are just joining us, we have a hat, not the one he's wearing. We have a different hat.
Different one.
It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, on rare occasion, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want, often questions or topics or ideas that they want us to talk about. And the hat magically forces us to do that by forwarding us the email. And then we read it, talk about it. That's the show when we have that option. And we actually do have an email this week, but we're saving it for next week because we got to record 2 episodes in a row. Because our next recording date would be the day after Thanksgiving, and we do not want to see each other then. So we are front loading.
Yeah. You see, the hat makes us talk.
This.
Hat makes us talk.
Yeah. The hat don't talk.
The hat doesn't talk.
I don't know. We haven't specified that in a few years, but the hat does not talk. It's a magical hat of talking.
Of talking.
You know also, the website may have some, it's giving weird errors for WordPress again. So if you're having trouble with the website, I apologize. I'll try and figure it out. Maybe.
I'm thinking right now about maybe like after Thanksgiving and after this is posted, going through and listening just to our Thanksgiving episodes and seeing what that's like.
I mean, go for it.
After this is posted, After this,
I'll listen to one episode. I ain't listening to 14 of them.
Yeah, after this is posted. Yeah, 14. That's right. There'll be 14 after this is posted. That's a lot. Oh, I don't know.
That is a lot. That's what you can do the day after Thanksgiving. It's just a marathon.
A marathon
of
podcast.
Listening to the Thanksgiving
just podcast. The Thanksgiving episode. Huh.
I worry that most of them are going to sound remarkably similar.
Probably. I wouldn't be surprised. And how many of them are going to have YouTube? So 2020, I guess, probably in the 2020 Thanksgiving episode is on YouTube.
Four or so.
Yeah. Probably. 2021, 22, 23. Well, five. Counting this one.
Five.
So, that's actually quite a few.
Well, if you do it, report back to us.
About what that was like.
Yeah.
I don't think you and I have...
And what kind of problems you have going on in your life that you felt the need to do that.
So, when I think about... Sometimes I think about the whole run. Like, what will have changed? What's really different? And it's hard for me to think of anything that's, like, wildly different, except a couple, like... Well, three specific things I can think of. And one pertains to me going back to school, which was a very late development. But other before that, I don't think there's a lot new or interesting going on with me for all that time. And then two things for you, because I don't think you were identifying as an atheist when we started, were you?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe you were. Okay, well, so then not that one. But there were,
I'm not sure.
You also became more I don't know quite how to characterize it. The first thing that I want to say is, like, politically interested and active, but I'm not sure that's quite true. But there was a time where you started to get more interest, like you were talking about giving to certain organizations. That was a thing that started while we were podcasting. Than you weren't yes. doing before. That would be the other thing. But other than that, it seems like we've been pretty consistent.
See, and I would say it was the other direction. I became less politically active and specifically started donating to organizations so that then I could keep them.
Yeah, you're right. That's probably
better. And also, let's be fair, the donations occurred specifically because of 2016.
Yeah. Right.
Like, literally, that was the plan we made after that happened.
But I can't
and
think
in fact, now that it's happening again, we are reevaluating and adding new ones to it and upping some of our donations.
Yeah, right. So, but, these are the only things I can think of that happened in our individual lives and together and all that were like a significant departure from what we were doing before. And they didn't even really upset. Like, I'm pretty sure a person listening in year 11 is going to have a very similar experience as year three. And another thing is, though, when you first start listening to us, we're a little unsteady and kind of trying to figure out what our...
It takes us a few years to...
But again, other than that, I think people tuning in now are getting the same product they got several years ago, which I'm not saying is a good thing, but I think that's true.
I would disagree for two reasons.
Okay.
One, you're neglecting the bit where I lost my job / retired /
Oh, yes.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, that was a big deal. You're right. Yep. I did overlook that one.
And the other one is, and I mean, maybe going back and listening to the Thanksgiving episode, you and I are quite different people, and I think it very much comes across in the podcast. The most straightforward way is, I think there's a lot more stuff you are willing to talk about on the podcast that you didn't used to, and there's a lot more stuff that I don't talk about on the podcast that I used
to. Oh. I mean, that's the first one's undoubtably true. Yes, you're right.
And it's hard for you to know the other one because you don't know what I'm talking about. Although sometimes, because we'll go out or something and I'll talk about stuff that I won't talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just in general, I have attempted to curb my oversharing in the last few years, especially because I have learned a lot of things about, like, the onus that puts on other people, and it's sort of intrusive in a way that I'm like, sometimes it doesn't need to happen. Although this is funny, I was just thinking about this yesterday. So sometimes I don't talk about stuff because I'm like, I don't think it's appropriate, but sometimes I don't because I'm like, this isn't good content is not interesting.
Right.
But my brain starts with the assumption that literally every thought I have is going to be on the podcast, in the sense that when I'm thinking about things, my brain starts rehearsing how I'm going to talk about it on the podcast. I had something yesterday that was so insignificant that I honestly don't remember what it was, but I found myself talking about what I'm going to talk about, how I'm going to talk about it on the podcast. And then I was like, I don't think you should. This is not a good podcast thing. Why? But that's how I translate my experiences now, is what am I going to tell William on the podcast, which is both cool and not cool at the same time. Like, I don't yet know how I feel about that. But yeah, apparently that's how I process experiences now, is how would I describe it on the podcast?
I think I think about some things that way. Not everything, but some things.
I am surprised at how much that happens. So, what is your Thanksgiving looking like this year?
Well, so it's the first Thanksgiving without Dad, so that's sad.
Yeah.
It's a lot of the same rules still apply, with, like, you know, a couple of the siblings have gotten in the habit of doing Thanksgiving with their spouse's family or whatever, because our family is not other Very families. No, other families care more about doing things like on the day than we do. We don't, you know, we can do it the day before, day after, weekend. We want to do it. We want to get together around that time and celebrate the holiday, but for it to be on the day or whatever, doesn't matter to us as much as it matters to some of my siblings' spouses' families. So that's still the case, which means we had to think of when, other than Thanksgiving, we were going to get together. And that happens to be tomorrow for me. When this airs, I will have already celebrated Thanksgiving with my family back on the farm, like almost a week earlier. On the day when people are hopefully listening to this after we post it on Thanksgiving,
bringing their families around so everyone can listen to it.
Abby and I will just be by ourselves.
Oh, I wondered if the kids would come. Are they hanging out with his family?
Correct. Cool. Again, because that's okay with us, you know, but they're coming over on Friday, and that's kind of been the tradition. I don't know if you noticed, but that's like, that one time they came and we watched, what was it?
All the Tremors movies?
Yeah. That was Black Friday, right? I'm pretty sure. Maybe it wasn't. I think it was, though. So that's another, they're coming over on Friday.
Are you watching a series?
Well, so that was like two times ago or something. And then they're like, oh, let's do it again. And then we didn't really. And part of the problem is that now there's two toddlers, you know, and they're very rambunctious. And so it's like, you know, we're just going to end up doing whatever the toddlers allow us to do. But it's always on the mind, right? It's always like, well, can we do this? Well, but also one of the older kid, can have nightmares, so it kind of limits.
Yeah, at this point you're limited. That like well, you remember we went and saw G.I. Joe The Rise of Cobra, and we took Kirk's at the time only child, and she was young enough, she didn't give a shit. Like a year or two later, it would have been very inappropriate to take her to that film, but at the time, like, there were just pictures up there and she wasn't even looking at it,
right? So I mean,
So Delmer's hitting the age where this shit actually
enters his brain. Right. And that actually wouldn't, of course, there's a certain level of that kind of challenge to something he's seeing where you can talk to him about it. And it would be healthy, right, to let him, you know, experience a thing and you can talk to him about it. But he's not really communicating at a level that you feel comfortable, like you're going to make a point or he's going to get better or whatever. So when we will get excited about maybe watching a series of things, and then suggestions will come out, and then it quickly we realize now we can't watch that. Now we can't watch that. And so there aren't very many left, right?
I think I've got the answer.
Yeah, what's that?
Hallmark Channel holiday movie.
Oh, man, that'd be more horrifying.
I mean, those are horrifying, but you have to be much older to realize. You have to be like in your 30s to realize how horrifying those are.
But I mean, you know, there are things like we could watch, you know, a whole bunch of Disney movies or something that, you know, he has watched and he's fine with, even though some of those can get pretty scary. Don't seem to bother him. So I don't know what we'll do exactly, but, you know, it'll be fun, whatever it is. And then, you know, we'll switch over the decorations. We'll probably actually do that either on Thanksgiving because we'll be by ourselves or the day before. And so that's how it looks for us. What about you?
So I'm assuming your family as a whole are not vegetarian.
I'm the only vegetarian.
Yeah. So presumably tomorrow there's turkey and shit like that.
Yes, they're having brisket, turkey, and a few other things. And when Abby and I are here by ourselves, she still wants to make a nice meal just for us, which for her will include turkey. Yes.
All right. What do you have?
Well, there are a lot of options that, you know, their companies make like special holiday you know, tofurkey makes a thing and field roast makes a thing.
My brother-in-law's deal is that tofurkey is what they do when they do. Although this year they're actually, my family in Oregon is actually going to stay at this hotel that has a restaurant in it that we used to go to when I was little. It's a really cool place down south on the coast. And they've got a Thanksgiving deal, like a three-course meal thing going on there. And there's options, and one of them is vegetarian. So they're doing that. So they're not cooking anything this year. But normally there's like a turkey, and then there's the tofurkey, and he loves his tofurkey.
Yeah, I like tofurkey, but field roast makes a good thing too, which I think I've had most of the time. And corn makes – it's not fancy, but it's delicious. And it makes the best – like if you're a vegetarian who has fond memories like I do of – after Thanksgiving having like turkey sandwiches, you know, because I mean, I used to love a turkey sandwich after Thanksgiving, sometimes with just turkey and butter, sometimes maybe some Miracle Whip on there. I know that's sacrilegious to some people, but that's what we had in my house, Miracle Whip, not mayo. And this stuff that corn makes, it's very small. It's not fancy, because some of the other ones make a fancy thing that's got like stuffing in it and everything else. This is a very simple thing, but it tastes like when you make a turkey sandwich out of it, it tastes really good. So
it's real good. Their hot dogs notwithstanding, corn. I like corn.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure we've already gotten my thing, and I think we got a field roast thing, because I really like the field roast things quite a bit. But she hasn't gotten her bird yet, so that's something we'll probably do sometime today, which is going to be, you know, almost a week ago to everybody else. Yeah, but so that's what is it you're doing for Thanksgiving again? What are your plans?
Just the usual. We'll head over to Chillicothe.
Okay.
And actually, the same thing with the different families thing. This has worked out a long time ago. Of the people that show up for the holidays, Trish has another sibling who lives in South Carolina and who doesn't show up for the holidays. But of the people who show up for the holidays, the kids that are married are me and Trish, and I'm not going to Oregon during the holidays. And then one of her sisters is married to somebody and they live locally, but we've got this all worked out, and it's been that way forever because by luck, his family's traditions are a little different. So on Thanksgiving, his family's big Thanksgiving stuff is a midday meal.
Oh.
And Trish's family's Thanksgiving stuff is more of an actual evening dinner thing. Mm-hmm. So they will go to one and then come to the other, which a little bit is rough for them because they have to eat two fucking Thanksgiving meals. But over the years, they have figured out how to pace themselves or whatever. And then for reasons I don't understand, his family's big Christmas get together is on the 24th. Mm-hmm. So we don't see them on the 24th. And then after they do their Christmas at home or whatever, they come over and we all have Christmas together then. So that actually works out really nice. But yeah, it's just gonna be the usual. I mean, there's all sorts of crazy discussions about what kind of pies and who's cooking what and what are we going to do on the other days. Are we maybe going to go see the Wicked movie, or are we going to stay home and watch Human versus Hamster on HBO, which apparently is, I don't know. There's a whole bunch of shit they talk about, and anytime I hear it, I'm like, you all are insane, and I'm fine with any of these. So
it's whatever. A multiple day thing for you, though.
Yeah, we will go Wednesday evening. Mm-hmm. Afternoon, evening, and then we will come home Sunday.
Okay.
And this year, because of the timing, we don't yet know how long we'll spend around Christmas. We may spend as much as a week there, just because I mean, also Trisha has a fair bit of time off, so a lot of she'll like she's taking the entire next week or previous week if you when you're listening to this. Off, but we're not leaving till Wednesday. She just had the time, so she's gonna have all of Thanksgiving week off and all of Christmas week off, and actually pretty much all of New Year's week off. So
yeah, I'm gonna have the Christmas and New Year's weeks off myself, so
that makes sense. I'll bet a lot of people aren't like, you know what, I want to come. No, they need to see you in early January after they've gone through the holidays and have all sorts of new trauma. By the way, just to give you another data point for funsies, because you talked about how only one of your clients talked about the election. Mm-hmm. I saw my therapist this weekend. I asked her. She said 75 to 80% of her clients need to talk about it.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
That's interesting.
And I mean, it's not like I know anything about her client base or really your client base. So who knows? But yeah, so apparently it is all over the place. But yeah, we'll just do the standard deal, and I'll just chill and eat. And yeah, you been watching anything? You been playing anything? You been doing anything with your life?
Well, before I get into that, I just want to point out that this picture back here of Batman, that Jazz made that for me years ago.
Jazz made that?
Yeah.
Dang.
And yes, right this second I'm not remembering when, and it's a long time ago, and right this second I'm not remembering when she did it, but it's been up on the wall here for ever since then. I love it, and that's, but I just wanted, if Jazz, people saw it, I wonder what it is. It's Jazz made that.
Jazz, the rest of you can do whatever. William, you, Jazz, you and me right here, we got it.
It's really cool. I love it.
Shh. I'm talking to Jazz.
Oh, sorry.
Jasmine, my dear, you have too many talents. It is not fair. You are hogging all the talent. You are the talent version of a billionaire. Morally indefensible. You are a professor. Like, right there, that's enough. If you're a professor, you've won. It's done.
Yeah,
that you is. Also apparently can draw or paint or whatever that is. You fucking taiko drumming, you too much. It's not fair. Give up some of those talents to other people. Just I don't care how or where, donate them to charity, but you have too much. It is unfair. You are in morally in the wrong here. Be less talented.
There's a hat she crocheted for me over there.
God damn it.
I wonder. I don't know if any of my other things are in here that she made for me.
Stop it, Jazz.
She's awesome. I love her so much.
I mean, do something. Like, get into drugs or develop a chronic illness. No, I don't want to wish that on you. But just something unuseful, unproductive, uninteresting to fill up some of your time, because this is annoying.
And she could at least have a boring life story, but she can't even do
maybe
that.
This is the thing. Maybe when you grow up with circus folk, this is what happens. Circus performing is the original gig economy. You have to be able to do a lot of different things because you never know.
No, that is true.
Gonna fail.
Oh, man.
bad. She posts stuff on Facebook, and every time I'm just, my life is a joke.
What is happening? Yeah, I think that about my life too sometimes.
All right, let's stop talking about the multi-hyphenate jazz. And
we're watching Dark Winds. And
are you?
Yeah. Well, you know, we like
us.
What?
Because of me?
No, when you first brought it up, I told you we'd seen like it on our things to watch, and we had intended to actually give it a look. It's partly because of you, because we didn't pull the trigger for a long time, and then you watched it.
I reminded you of it. Yeah.
But you also liked it, and
yeah, I think my AMC curse is broken.
Yeah. So I thought. Yes, so it is in part due to you, because that's when I went to Abby and said, I know we've been intending to watch this, but now that Tony has watched it and he liked it and it's AMC even, it's probably worth watching. And it is. It's very good, we think. We've only seen a few episodes, but we do like it. We did.
They're short seasons, which is also good. It's like 6 episodes a season.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, and I don't remember if I mentioned this, but we only watched the one season so far. Trish isn't positive she wants to continue. I might watch it on my own. But we often take a break between seasons of things. But it wraps up.
Oh.
Like, the first season conclude, and the second season involves the same characters and stuff, but it's like a different story. Like, apparently, I talked to my sister, because my sister's in on this. She watched it, and she read the original books.
Mm-hmm.
And the first season is apparently a combination of a couple of books, and then the second season deals with a lot of stuff that they didn't cover from one of those books.
Okay.
But they're complete story. Like, it resolved. There's no loose ends. If I don't see another season, I'm not asking what happened about anything. It's set.
But I recall your sister said something about not liking one of the ways a certain character was portrayed.
No, it's all of it. She there's a lot of stuff she didn't like because it's different than the books.
Oh, okay. All right.
Also, Zane McLennan, or whatever, the main guy who plays Joe and who was big and whatever, I really got to learn his name because he's popping off right now and I love him.
Yeah.
I just saw, because I rewatched a Jordan Breen thing, he was in the last of the Purge movies.
Oh, well, I didn't know
it that. Was a minor character, but he was in there.
I mean, I have seen him in other things. I have seen him in other things.
Oh, yeah, no, he's been in tons of stuff. He was in I first saw him in Fargo. Mm-hmm. So he was in History of the World Part II. He's in a lot. He's a really good dramatic and comedic actor, which is rare these days.
We also tried to watch Before, which is the Billy Crystal thing on Apple.
What is?
I don't like it very much.
I don't even get what it is.
Yeah, it's actually I don't get it either, and we're halfway through. So, but we watched The Penguin.
I've heard very good things.
Really good. Like,
I've heard very good things.
Episode for episode for episode, performance for performance for performance. Just really, really good. I thought.
I almost want to check it out because I've also heard it's good at avoiding, you know, comic booky superhero shtick.
So one thing I thought at the end, aside from thinking that it was very good, very well crafted, acted, and everything else, was I don't think Tony would like this.
Oh, all
right. Not because of the craft. You would very much, I think.
Oh yeah,
enjoy the craft of it, but it's bad things happen.
is a bummer. Yeah.
I mean, not. Bad things happen that I think you wouldn't like.
And it's in the Batverse, and Batman sucks, so whatever.
And I have to acknowledge I have a huge bias toward any of that kind of content. So obviously that's going to, you know, have an effect. But I really did like it. Abby liked it too. But there are things in there that I think would be triggering for you that might make you like regret even starting to watch it. I'm just,
that's good for me. I doubt I actually would have gone for
it. I mean, I don't know that for sure. I'm just, that's the impression I got.
Yeah.
And I'm notoriously bad at it. What?
It's no Bates Motel.
No, but yeah, there were definite moments. Cause I think about you, obviously, when I watch things thinking, oh, I'll bet Tony would like this. And then a thing will happen and I'll be like, oh no, he would not like that.
I'm getting better at some of that.
Well,
I can sit through a scene that I'm not super into or that makes me uncomfortable, as long as that's not, and it's also very much about how it's presented and how it's contextualized and stuff like that.
Right.
It's just the whole AMC thing has really helped me sort of narrow in on it, and the two major issues. I mean, obviously, if we're sensationalizing or glorifying certain types of violence and sexual violence and stuff, I'm out. But a lot of the reason I can't watch AMC in general is it's either just shitty people being shitty.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I hate everyone. I don't care what happens to them. Why would I watch this?
Oh.
Or it's this new thing I'm discovering. I think of it more as an Ozark thing, even though
yeah.
Breaking Bad is probably the best example, but this idea of like people that aren't bad, but then through accident and circumstance and desperation, they make worse and worse decisions, and by the end, they're monsters. Yeah. And I never need to see that. And it's a very common and I'm sure very compelling story design.
Yeah.
There's so many of these out there, and I understand why people like them, and I do.
Well, let me put it this way. I think one of the reasons the Penguin is doing so well is because people can imagine it like just being something someone wrote without any reference to Batman or anything like that, right? But I also observe that if someone did make something like that, exactly the same, except not connected to Batman, I think it would be very popular, very successful, and probably on AMC. Definitely on AMC. So maybe a compromise if you're curious about, like, well, I want to see how, you know, some of these performances, like, you could like read up on all the plot and everything and then decide, okay, yeah, I don't want to watch it, or I'll watch maybe this episode just so I can see
honestly, I probably wasn't going to watch it anyway. So
okay.
I'm not too worried.
But I mean, what's his name? Is it Colin?
Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell. Holy crap. I mean, just watching him do his thing is like,
although,
it just blows your mind.
It is that very performance that puts the show in danger a bit, because he fucking hates those prosthetics, apparently.
Like, yeah, I guess so.
It is assumed there will be a second season because it is so insanely popular. But I don't know how much will happen after that, because he fucking hates it. 3 hours every morning, and yeah, it's very uncomfortable, and yeah.
But it's extraordinary. And the person who I always forget her name. There's a character named Sophia Falcone in it. Holy cow! What a performance! Holy moly! She was just freaking amazing. So, yeah, and you know, everything about it is really well crafted. And there was a particular, and I can't remember this woman's name either. There was a particular woman who developed it, and she directed many of the episodes and wrote many of the episodes. And I can't remember other things she's worked on, but I'm super impressed with her work. I'm really, really impressed. So I don't know. It was in terms of the craft of it, super impressive. But I mean, there were things that were hard for me to, you know, get through. And I'm like, wow, that's dark. But anyway, I think those are the only major things. I think we are planning to splurge on a new. So we can't decide, though. We wanted to get Baldur's Gate 3 so we could play together.
Yeah,
But the new Dragon Age game is out.
Veilguard. Yeah.
And we probably won't get both. So it's like, what do we want? And because like, so even I would like to watch her play Dragon. I love watching her play Dragon Age. I love it. So it's like, gosh, what are we going to do?
Did you do all the DLC from Inquisition?
I think for all the games we've done DLCs and everything. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Because there were a ton of them for Inquisition, and I didn't realize it until much later, because I had played it and was done with it before they came out.
We might have missed one, but I don't think so. I think we did them
all. Well, this is the story. And in fact, the story that the new game comes from was in the very final DLC and was huge, enormous twist.
No, I think we played them all.
All right,
we'll have,
all right.
I guess we'll look to make sure, but I think we did.
If you know everything that's going on with that bald elf, you're probably fine.
I'm pretty sure we do, yeah.
All right. Yeah, I didn't. I mean, I did eventually because YouTube told me about it, but I didn't. And there was no hint of any of it in the actual game. And I was like, that's kind of shitty. And this is all based on that. And in fact, the original title of the game was going to be Dragon Age Dreadwolf.
Yeah.
Right. Here's what I will say. I don't know that I'm going to play the Dragon Age game. It's just been a while and it's a different game. The gameplay is different. The art style is different. Here's what I will say. Literally every single person on the planet loves Baldur's Gate 3 like it was their own child. Dragon Age Veilguard is getting a variety of different vibes.
That's true. And also it's...
I might want to go so far as mixed reviews, but kind of.
Also, it's new, so maybe let the bugs get worked out or something.
Well, which is always my thing. And... it's not like these are Nintendo titles. Someday they're going to be on cheap sale.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, maybe we'll
also,
probably just.
If you start playing Baldur's Gate 3, I'm going to start after Christmas playing it. I'm waiting because I don't want to get sucked in and then be gone for 4 days for Thanksgiving or get sucked in and be gone for a week for Christmas.
Yeah, right.
It's going to annoy me. So I'm trying to avoid that. But that's going to be my winter game. I have decided. It was that or Cyberpunk. And I do want to play Cyberpunk at some point, but I think Baldur's Gate 3 is going to happen first.
Yeah, we thought about Cyberpunk also. I don't know if we're ever going to do it, but I'm kind of interested in it.
Cool. I love the setting. I literally played the role-playing game. One of my favorite campaigns was Cyberpunk. And I played a lot of Shadowrun, which is just Cyberpunk with magic and trolls in it. But I love that genre.
I do too.
In general.
I do too.
The sort of the Gibson Neuromancer sort of mirror shades deal. It doesn't hold up now that the 80s are gone, but it's still a little fun. I've told you about it actually. So Shadowrun had various editions as a role playing game. And they did, when they made fourth edition, they addressed the issue that a lot of how the internet and stuff worked in Shadowrun was dated and silly compared to literally the way the internet works now.
Right.
And so what they did is within the game's lore, canonically, a huge world-spanning event happened that crashed the net. And then a new one got developed based on distributed technology. And essentially it became much more like we have now and was much more wireless and things like that. That was how they did it. They were like, oh, no, it still was like this up until, 2060 or whatever. But then it crashed and looked way more like it did in the early 2000s. So I thought that was clever of them.
That is clever.
Because, yeah, before it was, you got to break into a place and plug your keyboard into a socket.
Yeah, I remember, back in the late 80s trying to write, I've talked about it on the podcast before, trying to write sort of a post-apocalyptic story where society fell apart because of technology and people not being able to trust information that came from a long... great distances because of people could fake things so easily, which is weird that that's
say, actually... what a wild speculative concept.
Well, I wasn't the only one who thought of that. A lot of people I talked back in the late 80s, those of us using the internet were always thinking about that kind of thing. And they probably by then Gibson's stuff had come out and was already speculating things anyhow. So society collapsed because nobody could believe the news they saw on their computers anymore. And things became very fragmented and localized, and big governments and big everything couldn't maintain themselves, so they collapsed and whatever.
This was just a fantasy of yours. You were hoping it was going to happen, unlike other people.
So anyhow, so in the fiction that I came up with. And I even shot a short film and everything for a film class based on it. But I had the same problem where I was not really imagining, cell phones or I mean, wireless was something I was aware of because I talked about it, or my mentor talked about wireless communication and how important that was and different that was and whatever. But I wasn't thinking about that at all in my own fiction. So like you're talking about, all the times I had a character doing something with technology, it was basically the same technology that we had in the late 80s, plugging things in and modems that handshake and all that other stuff. I had no clue about what was going to happen. And I wasn't even thinking about that part.
It is very interesting to me. I'm just over 2/3 of the way through the second Three Body Problem book, and it's pretty hard sci-fi, hyper-intelligent sophons and people who dehydrate themselves notwithstanding. and right now, this particular book is leaping in time a lot. And we have some characters who essentially go into suspended animation and wake up later, and so we're getting it through their perspective. And we went through a sort of a big jump and we're reacclimating, and it's very interesting seeing how the technology went and so forth. And the cultural impact, there's a lot of that stuff in there as well, how the culture has changed and things. I really like the books. I don't understand why I like the books, but I like them.
So you had a couple movies you wanted to talk about, I think.
Why, yes. I do want to very quickly say we are still watching Chaos. We got like 3 episodes left.
Oh, yeah.
I still like it. I still enjoy it. I still recommend it. I am disappointed with it. It is a different version of the common story. It's a melodramatic mystery betrayal deal that, like, I feel like every show does nowadays. In the beginning, I thought it was going to be some really interesting look at the nature of belief and faith and destiny. It is not.
Oh, that's too bad.
And so I am disappointed in what it might have been. But it's very good, and everybody's really good. And there's some amazing actors in it, some of whom I know and some of whom I don't, and some of whom it turns out I did know, but only barely. But they're really good. The actress who plays Hera is phenomenal. The one who plays Poseidon, really, really great. And it's still pretty funny. It has its darker and less dark episodes and stuff, but it's pretty amusing in a lot of ways. So I would recommend it to pretty much anyone. And we're watching Somebody Somewhere season 2 on Max, which season 3 just dropped, but we're finally watching season 2. Hell of a show. Very sweet, very, I think I've talked about it before. It's sort of just a pseudo ensemble show about life in small town Kansas, specifically Manhattan, Kansas, where Kansas State University is. And it's sort of a chosen family kind of deal. I don't know. It's a very funny, goofy show. That's also very sweet. Like, you will laugh constantly and then you might cry a little bit. But it's just a very nice show, and it's got great performers in it that I like their performances, and I also have seen them other places and I just like them. It's a good show. It's a very sweet show. I recommend it. It's just like a sitcom length kind of deal. So I would recommend people check that out. Anyway, no, we need to talk about movies.
Okay.
So for a while now, Trish has been thinking about a movie from the late 90s that she saw and that she liked at the time very much. But she keeps thinking, I'll bet it's very different now. I'll bet it doesn't really hold up. Now that I think about it, that's weird. I wonder. And she's mentioned this many times, and she's like, we should check it out. And finally, we were like, all right, let's do it. Because I'd never seen it. But also, because it really is kind of bonkers, maybe we get high while we watch it. Just in case. So we did.
Uh-huh.
And we watched City of Angels.
Oh.
The Nick Cage, Meg Ryan joint about an angel who gives up his angelness for Meg Ryan.
Yeah, and that one song by whoever is really famous.
Two songs. There's a Goo Goo Dolls song.
Yeah, Goo Goo Dolls, yeah.
There's also an Alanis Morissette song. Uninvited also comes off of that soundtrack.
Oh, I guess I didn't know that.
The Goo Goo Dolls song Iris comes off of that soundtrack, but so does Uninvited by Alanis Morissette. And what is fascinating about that is both songs take on a whole different meaning because they are very clearly about what happens in the movie. And especially the Goo Goo Dolls song, like it literally, you're like, oh, when I heard those lyrics, I put the comma here, but the comma actually goes here. It means something, like literally the sentence structure means something different in the context of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't hear the song except in the context of the movie, so I've always heard it that way.
And it's also fascinating because the Goo Goo Dolls song is very clearly from the perspective of Nick Cage's angel character.
Seems to be.
And the Alanis Morissette song is very clearly from the perspective of Meg Ryan's mortal woman character. And they are very different tonally.
I'll have to listen to that.
It's very interesting. But so have you seen the movie?
A few times. I saw it all when right. It came out and it's one that Abby likes. So we probably saw it again. I mean, it's been a few years now.
All right. Well, this could hurt our friendship and also may be really good for you. So wait for it. This is going to be exciting.
Hurt our friendship.
I'm watching it and I'm like, oh, this is such a cool idea that they so fucked up. Like the overall world they have built is fascinating. And the implications are fascinating. And they don't give a shit. It's just a romance. And it's a creepy as hell romance. Like, it is not romantic. It is creepy. And Nick Cage, who I'm sure was hired for his popularity, but also his sort of ability to be otherworldly, makes his character... I do not believe someone would fall in love with this character. It has some cool bits. Everything with Dennis Franz is refreshingly neat, and I love seeing him in that kind of role. It has a very young Andre Brouwer, which was both wonderful and made me extra sad that he's dead now. By the way, we are losing bald black men who are great actors at a shocking pace now. Mm-hmm. Lance Riddick, Tony Todd, Andre Brouwer, they're just going, and I am not happy about that. We need to do something about this. But it's creepy as fuck, in my opinion. And it's very much, it's not a rom-com, but it's a romance whose romance is about as believable and healthy as your average rom-com, in my opinion. I think it's terrible. But I'm like, oh, but this is such a cool idea. If somebody had made this not as a romance, it could be amazing. And then I remember. This movie is sort of technically a remake. It is based on a different movie. And that movie is called Wings of Desire. I heard about this movie early in college. I was sitting at a meal with one of the Res Life coordinators who were the grown-ups that we had to sort of keep an eye on the dorms.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me about this movie, and I remember thinking it was really cool. And over the years, I'm like, I should really see this, but I never got around to it because it sounded very art housey in a way that I was like, I'd probably get bored. I don't know. There's certain movies that I'm like, I want to see them, but I never want to see them now sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, oh, shit. What if that movie actually did a good job with this? And so we opted to watch that movie. And we watched it a couple days ago, like 4 days or so after City of Angels. And we watched that one sober. Instantly better. I think I paused it 20 minutes in and I said, what does it say that I already like everything about this movie better than everything about the other movie? It is, let me give you some rundown here. It's from 1987. It is a German-French co-production. It is largely in black and white. It is set in Berlin in 1987. And it stars, among other people, Peter Falk as Peter Falk. And in a smaller role, Nick Cave as Nick Cave. And the Bad Seeds. They're there. And it is amazing. I loved it, and it's going to stick with me forever. However, I cannot recommend it to everybody. It is definitely an art film, and it is over 2 hours long, and it is unbelievably not naturalistic.
East Berlin or West Berlin?
Well, a little of both, which weirds me out. Oh. Because I'm like, how did they even get to shoot in there? Because this is 2 years before the wall comes down, and they don't know the wall is going to come down. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing. This movie is not a romance. There is a romance within it, similar to the one in The Thing. Similar. But that's not what the movie's about, and that's not really the motivating factor. That's one little part of it. And it is very much focused on it is a rumination on concepts of connection and humanity and very much filtered through a post-war Berlin, and there's a lot of like people who still remember the war and the fact that at that point in Berlin there were still ruins from being bombed in World War II. And so it is very much of its time and place. And so much of it is a lot of like monologues and things in ways that it's just going to turn some people off. The City of Angels was very much a mainstream movie in that sense. And this is not that. But it's amazing. And it has so much. There are places where it gets overwrought. If I'm honest, the romance subplot at its climax, I was disappointed in that scene. I had been really waiting for that scene, and it felt a little too up its own ass in how it handled its dialogue or whatever. But it's fascinating, and it's way more about – it's about the angels and what they are and sort of – not even why they are, but how they operate. And I mean, there are scenes – there's so many things where I'm like, oh, that's this movie's version of that scene from City of Angels. Mm-hmm. And there's like a scene where Nick Cage and Andre Brower, both angels, have a conversation that boils down to, wouldn't it be awesome if we could touch things? We don't have that capacity. It would be cool. In Wings of Desire, it is a really impressive monologue about how I just want to do something for myself. Everything we do is either just watching, or every act we make is pretense to fill a greater plan. I never can just do a thing for like, and it's so much more compelling than just like, wouldn't touch be nice? It's also in a few different languages. 80 to 90% of it is German, a little bit of French, some English. So you're going to be reading some subtitles. It does crack me up because we always have the captions on. So there's subtitles, but then there's a few things that aren't subtitled that just say speaking German, which I'm like, they've been speaking German the whole time. And actually one time where they say speaking German for somebody, and it's a very light thing, but it's enough for me to be like, that's Japanese. And it's clearly a Japanese woman, but also I recognize enough to know that's Japanese. But apparently the captioners thought it was German. And Peter Falk is amazing, but Peter Falk is literally amazing in anything he's ever done. Peter Falk has never, as far as I can tell, given a single performance that was not spectacular. And he's amazing in this, and he plays himself in this. And it's the director has done a ton of stuff. He even made couple of films last year. He's still around and all this. It's amazing. It's a movie. City of Angels is only going to stick around with me because it's hilariously tone deaf and ridiculous in a lot of ways. And just, I don't know. I mean, I love that your wife loves it or whatever, but it's not good.
Well,
it's not.
For the record,
it made a big swing and it absolutely whiffed it.
For the record,
and I credit it for its big swing.
For the record, we both hate the romance angle of it entirely.
But that's the whole movie.
Well, yes and no. Keep in mind that I hate the romance in everything. So,
of course. Almost everyone do I as well. There are occasions where they get it right. But yeah.
If I was going to write off a movie because I hate the romance in it, I wouldn't like anything. So we just highlight the stuff we do like. Well, actually, we both like the Goo Goo Dolls song. We think it's a good song just by itself.
You don't got to watch a movie to hear that song.
No, I know, but that's where I was introduced to it. But we liked the aspects of it that was just really about the stuff you're talking about.
You should watch Wings of Desire.
Probably.
That's what that whole movie is.
Probably. We liked, he likes Ernest Hemingway because of how he writes about how things taste, you know. Like, that's pretty clever.
And that is an original thing to City of Angels. But that kind of thing is all through Wings of Desire. And that's the thing. Like, you hate the romance angle. City of Angels is a romance. Like, if you're like, what genre is this film?
Romance. I know, but...
What I'm saying is Wings of Desire is not that.
We'll have to look into it. Oh, we also liked the whole falling concept, you know, like, oh, and if an angel is that interested in what life is like for humans, what we didn't like was we felt like the romance was put in there to dumb the story down. That's what we felt like, right? Like they couldn't make they couldn't make it so that an angel was just fascinated by humanity and like what you were talking about, like, well, I would just like to do something for myself or. Damn it! I want to taste a steak. I want to see what that's like.
Yeah.
But they made it a romance to dumb it down because they didn't think anybody would watch it otherwise. And
that's the thing. In Wings of Desire, he wants to be. He wants to not be what he is because he wants to not be what he is because he wants to be a human. He wants to do all the things. There's also a girl, but it's like one of the things on
one of the right. Yes. Right. Not the thing.
And it's also not
creepy.
Well, it's not well.
Because it is creepy in the movie.
I mean, it's not creepy except that sort of everyone in Wings of Desire is creepy because, again, it's very not naturalistic. And
I understand what you're saying.
Weird. You're not supposed to believe it's real. And so much of the movie, so much of what we're hearing is internal monologue from everyone. Because that's part of the thing is the angels can hear everybody's thoughts and that's what they're paying attention to. And so there's a lot of that. And in fact, the first like half of the movie, maybe longer, the first like 2/3 of the movie, there's very little plot. It's just angels in different situations hearing thoughts. Also, the things where the angels also go around and like shepherd the dead, not a thing in this at all. I think they just needed to give them more to do. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of things that they in City of Angels, there's an implication that there's just a shit ton of angels and they're everywhere all the time. In this, it is actually specifically a point that they don't manage to experience everything because there are too few of them and there always sort of have been. And I found that interesting because there's one point where two of them are having this discussion about the place they're in and its history from like before time up to now. And they talk about there are chunks that they didn't record and witness because there just weren't enough to go around.
Interesting.
And a lot more into sort of what they're doing and why they're doing it. But there's also just a lot of ruminations by people. And again, a lot of it is contextualized through the aftermath of World War II and the wall and everything like that. So it's very much of that time. And that obviously couldn't have translated into City of Angels. But yeah, it's not. You definitely should check this shit out. And it just... I told Trish at a certain point in the beginning, I was like, we don't need the plot. I could just watch 2 hours of this stuff. and find it interesting.
Yeah, it is sad that City of Angels was like that. I've always, anytime I've watched it, I'm like, man, I just wish they could have. But I didn't feel like they, I mean, I didn't contextualize it as they whiffed it. I contextualized it as some suit somewhere said, you're going to have to jazz this up or something, or people won't watch it. And that's the romance became a main thing.
I consider the suit a member of they.
Okay.
So, that's the thing. After we finished, and I will also say this, because it is such an art, Trish fell asleep in the middle of Wings of Desire.
Wings of Desire, okay.
She then woke up again. And what I told her is, I said, you missed some very significant stuff. In terms of following the story, you're fine. Mm. So much of it is sort of interconnected vignettes.
Mm-hmm.
She was fine. And despite having fallen asleep in the machine, she'd had a rough day. She still loved it. Even without the sort of bit in the middle. But what she said at the time is, she's like, somebody liked this movie well enough to be like, we need to remake this, and yet made City of Angels. Like, those two things shouldn't be able to go. Nobody who saw it, it's very much like Zack Snyder loved Watchmen and then he made the Watchmen movie.
Well, but right. Or
in that case, he was literally doing like shot for shot things, and that's just what was important to him. Like, City of Angels, I'm like, you didn't get Wings of Desire. So how did you like Wings of Desire enough to make this and yet so thoroughly not understand it? And but it made me so happy, because when I was watching City of Angels, the whole time what I was thinking was not, this movie sucks. I was thinking, this is such a cool concept and they're doing such dog shit with it.
No, right.
But it's such a neat idea. And then fortunately the light shone down and I was like, oh shit, I forgot. This is based off a different movie. And you can even see in the credits, it's based on Wings of Desire. And it's on Max, by the way. Wings of Desire is currently sitting on Max. So
do you think, I mean, all you're doing is confirming our own theories about it, to say, this is, they dumbed this down. Someone had a really big and cool idea and they dumbed it down. And now you're saying, yeah, that's exactly what happened.
I don't even want to go so far as to say dumb. They mainstreamed it. Wings of Desire would not have been a huge success in the
U.S. Okay, that was going to be my next question is, do you think that doing something like that to the story was necessary for it to even play in the United States?
I mean, outside of art house theaters, absolutely. Wings of Desire is solidly an art film.
Okay, but there's no middle ground where they could have still honored the spirit of the existential exploration without throwing in a romance that I don't even think works, honestly, just like you. But did they really have to do it that hard?
No, they didn't have to go that hard.
Okay.
If I was remaking Wings of Desire for a mainstream American audience, I'm not saying it would be good. Just Wings of Desire is good. Just have Wings of Desire. But if you're gonna, you could have done it better.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. If it could have been
and better. retained the thing, which has to be the point, because it's not like they were like, oh, this movie's doing gangbusters, we got to get in. It's not like when a successful J horror movie comes out and they need to make it so that it won't have subtitles.
Right, right.
And they fuck it up as they always do. Except apparently with The Ring. Apparently The Ring is better than the original. The American remake. It's the only one I've heard. I haven't seen either. I don't give a shit. But I have heard it is the one time where the American remake is better. Although, actually, the remake of Speak No Evil is not better, but different in an also good way that recently came out, I have also heard. Okay. I don't want to see that one because that one's way too fucked up for me. But it's not that, because it wasn't a moneymaker.
Right.
Like, it's almost entirely, well, not almost, it again, it's like, how much is German? It is like 80% black and white. And so much of it is just looking at people not talking and hearing their thoughts on their life and the world and shit in their head. Like, huge swaths of people, including definitely some listeners, would be bored out of their fucking minds. This right. is not a movie for everyone. But you know what? City of Angels is not a movie for pretty much anyone.
Oh, come on. It's like, not that
it
bad.
Didn't. It's there. But I mean, there's not. I don't think there's people who are like, I love City of Angels and I hate Wings of Desire. I don't think that's possible.
Mm.
Whereas the reverse, I think, is very possible.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just based on what you're saying, I'm sure that's true. I'm sure that's true.
But it was really amazing. And I was like, oh, they put too much in. And you can get too art house for me. You can definitely get too art house for me. I can get bored. I mean, I watch a lot of YouTube. I can get bored. But I was locked in on this. And from jump, I was just like, I can already tell. This is going to be so much better. And Peter Falk, it's a minor role, but I don't want to spoil things or whatever, because there are a lot of plot points that are the same between them. But there are also a lot of specific things that are not the same. And I don't want to spoil any, but some pretty big elements in both movies don't appear in the other one. But a lot of it does. And a lot of specific, like, oh, this is that scene. Oh, this is, or just other shit like, certain set pieces feature prominently in different ways, but it's the same set piece in both. That is very interesting. Yeah, it's really impressive. And it's what City of Angels should have, like that's why you like City of Angels, because it has a seed of Wings of Desire.
No, I'm sure that's true.
I am extremely excited. If you watch it and then tell me, actually, here are some things about City of Angels that we liked that Wings of Desire didn't have, I'd love to hear that. There aren't a lot for me. There are moments. But by and large, Wings of Desire just beats on every level. That's the thing. I don't want to say City of Angels is bad. City of Angels is a huge disappointment. And it was a huge disappointment before I saw the other movie. Now that I've seen the other movie, I'm like, what were you doing? how did this happen?
Well, like, I mean,
this is such a weird juxtaposition of making this movie but not making it at the same time.
Yeah, like,
if you weren't going to make it, why did you make it? And if you made it, why did you not make it?
I understand the impulse to take something that's, you know, that has a lot of this art house or has a lot of subtitles in it, and saying, you know what? We can make something that is more palatable to American audiences without taking it so far that they're ruining it, right?
Yeah.
And it's
City of Angels' whole thing is just basically like, love is everything.
Yeah.
Basic takeaway from the movie. No. Well, Wings of Desire does not have a simple
more takeaway. Specifically romantic, you know, heteronormative love, more specifically, right?
Sorry, I assume since it's a movie, that's what we mean. If I'm not talking about parent-child love, I'm clearly talking
And that
about
part is super totally annoying. Kind. Super annoying. I totally agree with you. But
And it's not believable. And Nick Cage does not act human, which, fair enough, he's not human. But then all the interactions don't make sense because he's a robot or something. Like he uncanny valleys himself. And I'm sure that's why I hired him. But I'm like, then I don't buy any of the connections because he's not a person. Like I don't like him and it's he and Meg Ryan didn't have chemistry. And I don't know that that's the actor's fault. It's because I wouldn't have bought Meg Ryan and a raccoon having a romance either. Like it's not, whereas the angels are still, they have desires. And they are functional and it is much more interesting. And this is all, I don't want to say subtextual, but not explicated. What angels know and what angels don't know is much more interesting in Wings of Desire and much more interesting to think about why. Because it's when you sort of get into what they are and how they've been and what they do, like it makes sense because Trish was like, how do they know this? But and I'm like, here's why. And even certain bits where they know part of something, and I'm like, well, that's because of this content. Like, it's just it's a movie I'm still thinking about. And with City of Angels, all I'm thinking about is Nick Cage in a trench coat going, I'm a messenger of God. And that's it.
See, all the stuff you were just talking about are things that we talked about from City of Angels, actually. I mean, things the movie didn't address, yeah. That's true, but we thought about it. We considered it. We debated it.
That's why I wasn't just like, this is a bad movie. I was like, oh, this is so interesting. I really wish there was a movie that actually dealt with this stuff.
Yeah, like, so, like, the reason I liked so much the whole thing with the Hemingway thing is because it's like, to me, it was speaking to the notion that whatever else you can say about angels in the movie and they can't feel things and whatever, they do have a sense of beauty. And that sense of beauty is developed enough in a sort of a generic sense for them to hear poetry or to hear things that they can sense there's beauty in it. But there's a piece of the beauty they're not perceiving, like they can perceive in a mountain or they can perceive in an ocean or the stars or any of the rest of God's creation. But it's like humans are talking about things having beauty that humans make, that humans experience, yes. That humans create. And it's like, I feel like there's beauty there. I get that sense, but I don't. But I don't know what it is.
The joy of mundane human experience, sensual experience.
Right.
It is hinted at in City of Angels. Essentially, right. Dennis Franz gets a good sort of speech.
Yeah. About it. Exactly. He talks about that. But then it's kind of not. Thing.
We don't do anything with it.
No, that's true. You're right.
This movie does stuff with it, and I mean, this movie is what it's about. To a certain degree, the romance is just, and in fact, it's very existentialist in a certain way. Like it's not. The romance isn't that romantic, I'll be honest. Like, it's very much, in fact, a lot of the stuff that I thought was overly pretentious is still dealing with the sort of thing of, like, romance is a thing you sort of decide to do. As opposed to City of Angels, where it's very much, like, clearly God came down and...
Yeah, it's the meaning of everything. I mean,
To be totally fair, neither movie explicitly addresses God in any way. And I appreciate that, because that's not what it should have been about. And it's not. And City of Angels got that right as well. Although we did say a messenger of God, but whatever. And that became a whole thing. I'm like, in no way are they messengers of God. And then Trish is like, well... The word messenger, if you go back into the Hebrew Bible and stuff, it's a little bit of a different meaning.
Malachi and all that stuff, yeah.
But we don't play with that in Wings of Desire. It's also got some really good actors in it. I mean, at this point, check it out. You watch it and then come back and give a report. What's really going to fucking happen is you and I are planning to get together offline. Watch it before then, and you and I will spend 3 hours talking about this. Full spoilers and everything, so we won't do it on the podcast.
I'm sending myself a note.
Subscribe to Behind the Pancakes. You too can hear it.
Where did you see it? Desire is.
Yeah, I think we had to pay $3 on Amazon for City of Angels, but. No, Wings of Desire is currently, who knows how long, but it is currently on Max included just there.
So Trish didn't like it at all when she saw it again, City of Angels.
No, I think she felt similar to me.
Okay.
And to be fair, Trish can't hold her weed like I can. So I'm not sure she had as coherent, but I take it back. She did, because we did a lot of comparison and contrast afterward, after Wings of Desire.
Mm.
And she knew, and very interesting bits that, like, things happen in City of Angels that she interpreted a certain way, and the same thing happens in Wings of Desire, but it makes it more clear that it's actually blah, blah, blah. Like, well, I'll give you an example. Early in City of Angels, Nick Cage and Andre Brower are writing in their notebooks and talking. She interpreted that as just sort of a side guilty pleasure that the two of them did, and that wasn't like part of their angelness. But no, it definitely is. And in Wings of Desire, you see, and to be fair, I'd never interpreted it that way. I interpreted it the same in both. But at the time, she was like, no, I thought that was just their, like, human curiosity thing on the side. And to be fair, it's never really... That's what weirds me out, is there's so much stuff in City of Angels that just is incredibly surface and doesn't dive down into it the way Wings of Desire does. And the movies are almost the same length. I believe it's 1 hour 57 and 2 hours 8 minutes. Like, so I'm like, how, what were you filling the time with? I watched it and I'm like, how did you spend the same amount of time saying so much less?
Well, they had to give time to the romance.
City of Angels had some really good shots. Wings of Desire also has some really good shots, and they are different shots. But there are some visual things in City of Angels that are kind of cool. And I give credit for that. And the soundtrack slaps. But yeah, Uninvited during the end credits of City of Angels gives you the Meg Ryan side of things, and it's creepier.
Guess I need to look at that. I never really or thought about that.
To the song. You can just listen to the song, because it just plays over the credits. It's not, we're not seeing anything. Yeah, so that was fun to check it. But anyway, we are over time. We have to record another one. So happy Thanksgiving, everyone. I hope you are full of turkey or its non-union vegetarian equivalent. Listening in next week, which will be a few minutes for us. And gobble gobble. That's how you should always end Thanksgiving. Thanks.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.